MLPs, and one of the things about MLPs that historically has kept pension funds out of it has been unrelated business taxable income. They were structured primarily for tax as taxable investments for individuals, and meaning that the tax occurred at the individual level, not at the corporate level, and then again at the individual level, which would, from the standpoint, if you had a tax exempt fund, then there would have been no tax anywhere, anytime. And so the IRS has frowned on that. A lot of state funds have gone into MLPs, and actually the International Monetary Fund has an allocation to MLPs now. And they just go, nah, 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 nah. They could care less about what the IRS says, because the IRS doesn't determine whether they're going to maintain their tax-exempt status or not. But pension plans in general do have that problem, so the rank and file have not gone into them. However, now there's a way to get into MLPs without the tax implications.
How is that?
And well, there are a couple of ways. One is there's an index out there, an ETN, or there are several of them now. But the major one, the one that's been around the longest, is the Alerian MLP Index with a ticker symbol of AMJ, which, because it is not a direct investment in REITs, but a clone of those returns of a note from J.P. Morgan, you get a 1099. You know, get a K-1. So that goes away. Now you're gonna wind up with about an 85 basis point to say a 1% haircut on the yield of the REITs, because that's what they use to pay down, and the manager gets that, and the manager pays the fees and that type of thing. The other ways are there's open-end mutual fund that's come in where they've registered as a C corp, so they pay the taxes out of the fund, and then you get the returns after taxes. Keep in mind that a lot of the return from the REITs are return of capital, the way that it's structured, so they may be getting a 5%. Dividend out of the REITs, or 6%, but only like a 1 or 1.5% of that 6% is income from the standpoint of non-taxable income. So they just have to pay tax on that 1.5%. And those mutual fund arena's brand is relatively brand new, and so that's available now. And there's also mutual funds that, to avoid that, don't set up as a C corp, but as a mutual fund, but only invest a small portion in the overall MLP investments themselves, but then buy shares in parent corporations or other corporations that are in the pipeline business or that type of thing, to gain overall infrastructure exposure without the exposure to unrelated business taxable income.
Is it fair to say that these are generally related to the energy
yes.
world?
Yes.
In other words, pipelines and...
Their pipelines, their storage facilities, their transportations, you know, could be tankers or whatever, yeah. But they're... About primarily in the energy infrastructure business.
Also, they have a general partner, and then everybody that is a limited partner outside of that. Is that fair?
That's fair. That's what the master limited partnership structure basically says, that, you know, the limited partners get taxed on their, you know, share of things, and so there's not a tax at the partnership level, but at the partner level. And that's why...
That's what you were going through there.
What I was going through a minute ago.
Gotcha.
On page three is a look at year-by-year returns from MLPs compared to the stock market using the S&P 500. And here again, I apologize, but this is colored.
You can't see it, Peter.
What's that?
You can't see it.
Oh, I got black and green. That's easy.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
So purples and blues.
Oh, okay. All right. Anyway, the green is the Alerian MLP index. And if you look at this, there's a significant number of time frames, years, that the Alerian MLP index just significantly beats the stock market. In 96, a little bit less, 97 less. This is the big growth, you know, time frame, if you will, from the standpoint of the stock market. 98, MLPs were slightly negative. 99, slightly negative on a total return basis. Then 2000, when the stock market took a hit, MLPs had significantly positive returns. Same thing in 2001, had some downside protection in 2002, 2003, really good returns relative to the stock market. And then in 2008, everything was lockstep down pretty much the same amount. 2009, big recovery out of MLPs. 2010, significant recovery. Year to date, slightly negative versus a little bit more negative for the index.
Richard, on that chart on the note, on the percentages down below, I think the columns are a little truncated there because those 2008 would be negative. I assume is that in 2008 was 30. Alerians,
yeah, those are negative. Those are negative. That got truncated.
Negative,
you can see the percent marked off there too. I should tell them to only put in one decimal point and get
right.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can.
How many of the other years are should be negative, John?
But the only 2002 would be.
Yeah, if you look up above 2002,
yeah, okay.
2001,
1999,
were
98.
Or the S&P, you can sort of go by the chart. The chart is more.
Yeah, gotcha.
Bar chart's better to look at.
Yeah, I was looking.
Right.
I was looking at the number.
Yeah.
Rather than the chart.
Yeah. Well.
I was having a hard time.
I was thinking the AMG is that one of them we consider? AMG.
AMJ.
Oh, AMJ. On the wrong company. Can't see colors or hear.
We're going to get you a CNI dog, Peter.
But then if you look at the next page, which is now going into trailing performance annualized over a 15-year time frame, that green bar just has been incredible. Absolutely incredible returns.
I know you gave us some material on the master limited partnerships, but when you look at the, you know, isn't it pretty important for us to understand that if we're buying into an index, it's a game changer because we're just buying shares.
Right.
We're buying shares in a fund.
Right.
That has rights to an equity position.
Right.
And there are minority interest positions in that as well.
Right.
And a lot of expenses and even debt.
Yeah, if you buy into the index, it's an ETN. I mean, it's an exchange traded note. The return of the note is the underlying index minus the fees. It does carry a credit component in that. You know, and if you look at the ones that have them are J.P. Morgan, Credit Suisse, Morgan Stanley, and there's another one, Swiss Bank. are the ones who are issuing
the notes.
The notes.
Returns are very good, isn't it?
2011's
been a rough year.
2011 has been a rough year.
45% in 09, 27% in 10, according to this index, with only 2% in 11.
Long term, it's been a fantastic thing to have exposure to. I've had clients involved in the MLPs for 7+ years now.
But that's a direct investment, though.
No, it says primarily, well, it says, it was really initially clients that said, well, you know, we're filing a tax return anyway, so if we just have to file another line item for our pension plan, we'll do it. And so they said, okay, hire somebody that can run a managed portfolio for us, give us a consolidated K-1, and we'll, you know, we'll just take, file the taxes.
How much of this is offshore, outside the United States, in general, please?
Very little. The index is a global index, so there is some in the index. From the standpoint of the managed portfolios, little or none.
Yeah, management would be here, I understand.
Right.
You've shown one, obviously there are others.
One what?
One.
This is just the index.
Oh, okay.
This is just the index.
Okay.
And the index has been extraordinarily hard to beat. I think that it's, that managed portfolios are going to start doing better relative to the index, because every year there are more and more and more MLPs coming on. So as that expands from the standpoint of opportunities of where to put, you know, the assets, then it makes it a little bit, as, I guess, as the opportunity set opens up, then value added by the manager should open up. Page 4 is really an incredible page, because if you look at the overall 15-year risk return, volatility and return, MLPs have not only had significantly better than the return of the S&P, but significantly less volatility. So very consistent versus the S&P 500. And one of the things we talked about was diversification earlier on. The REITs should have done one of these for REITs, but on page 5, the overall correlation to the market benchmark over time has, you know, moved up somewhat. Fairly high correlated here is both the market and the MLPs and whatever since 2007 started performing in the same direction. So diversification has narrowed somewhat. I think that's going to change and move back down where it starts adding more diversification. I think that it's that this later time frame has just been because everything just cratered together and now it's all recovering together.
Okay. So, anybody have any other questions or comments? We have more to go through.
Well, just real quickly here, I wanted to show you some of the opportunities from separately, you know, managed accounts and what they've done. If you can move to page 9, on a, you know, year by year basis, there are a couple of guys that have been in it for a long time. Famco is one. Tortoise has been in it for a significant period of time. Swank Capital has moved into, they're in Dallas, has moved into managing portfolios. They've managed a hedge fund in this area for a long time, but now they're doing long-only portfolios. And Chickasaw Capital, which is out of Oklahoma. So there are managed, you know, portfolios available. And if we look at those portfolios looking out over time frame on page 8,
Should we be looking at the managed portfolios or the index?
Well, that's the, that in comes the next question, and quite frankly, this is an information thing, and next time we'll make up our mind whether we want to do one or the other, I would think, you know. There are positives to both sides. But we do have, if you look at out over 8 year of time frame, you have the index up 14%, you've got Tortoise Capital that's been up 16%, and you've got FAMCO that's been up
almost negates the managed side of it. The index doing as well as...
Well, that's what I said. The index has been very, very hard to beat. I think that may be changing, but on a, you know, historical basis, the index has been really hard to beat. Really hard to beat. And then the rest of it is just additional, you know, information on some of the managers, drawdowns, capture ratios, all of that type of stuff. One of the, and there's some pages, if you will, on page 14, if you were looking at the overall managers and how long of a time frame they've had and how well they've done, and over those time frames, what did best. If we have a new manager or whatever that came in, like the J.P. Morgan MLP index was preceded by an index called BSR. BSR had about a five-year track record, so this really should have gone back 8 years, but J.P. Morgan purchased Bear Stearns. Bear Stearns had the BSR index. They continued to run that index, and then they said, we're just going to put it out under our own name. And when they did, they delisted the BSR index. So my clients that were in the BSR index, I called up J.P. Morgan. They said, we'll do a one-to-one trade for you, no problem. So boom, went right into the AMJ index. But that's why it shows such a short period of time, but it's been tremendous return over that time frame. If you notice, the index itself, the Alerian MLP up 90%, J.P. Morgan up 86.5%. Well over that time frame, the reason for that are the fees. So they're matching the index except for fees. Then we pull in the Cushing MLP fund, which was down here since November 10 of 2011. Alerian MLP index has the best return over that time frame. And here again, J.P. Morgan, just a fee differential. From the standpoint of FAMCO, they did very, very well over the last year-to-date time frame. And then from a standpoint, there's a main gate MLP index that is, which is Chickasaw, which is down 4.5%. Everything else down much, much higher over the last 6 months. And then the last quarter, Tortoise MLPs with the best return. So next time we'll, you know, and I may be able to find something else to put in here, but next time we'll hopefully decide, yes, we want to do it, and here's how we want to do it. Okay. But I think it would be a great addition to your overall program.
Okay, thank you, Richard. John? I just have a comment about our rate of return. I'm not going to quit saying it. Do you believe that we are making adequate provisions for our plan so that we can continue to pay 7%? Because the market is beating us up.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think diversification is one of the only things that's going to help us out.
We've got to work the return side of it. I'm talking about our contribution
our contribution making. Well, I think actuarially, you know, there were, the count, you're right. Of course, it's using a 7.5% as our target. And we're not there this year. It looks, you know, challenging.
We've been saying that for 5 years.
I understand. Well, I mean, the plan hadn't hit the target overall for a decade.
Oh, damn, sure.
So it's but then a lot of plans, as I said, a lot of plans are in there. And, I mean.
So when do we reconcile that and either make the commitment and put more money into the plan or adjust our assumptions? Because that's my biggest concern is that if we've got all this management, we've got a lot of people looking, we've got many eyes looking, but nobody's willing to make that hard decision of either contributing the capital to the plan to make up for the loss or to make up for the poor performance, I should say, or adjusting our assumption.
Right, bringing the assumption down, which will effectively make you make a higher contribution. That would force a higher contribution.
Either one, unfortunately,
but higher contribution.
But to ignore it and just hope everything works out is where there's a lot of media attention today.
Right.
And that's what this committee's about.
Right.
Is about that particular difficult issue.
If we're meeting our actuarial assumptions, though, they're factoring in the fact. Well, they're really not.
They're saying that they're assuming that you're going to make 7.5% return in future years, and here's how much you have put in. Which, of course, what Peter's saying is, hey,
we're not even getting there.
We're not going to get there. That, and of course, and Richard can speak to this because he represents a lot of other entities too. I haven't seen any public entities that are dramatically changing their targets at this point. In effect, because of course a lot of them are cities and counties which have to go to the taxpayer to get them to pay.
Sure.
I mean, you've got to come up with the money some way budget wise. So they're just hoping that the economy will, you know, it's a good thing. But
well, I mean, there's really a question in my. I mean, this is a difficult thing to put on the table, but we cannot ignore what's happened to our investment return over the last 10 years. To ignore it and hope everything works out is really not, it's really pushing the burden forward. And we've got a lot of discussion about that in our current fiscal policy with the country and our debt. And we have the resources to manage and handle this matter. I don't want to go out and make a large contribution, lower our assumption, and get, you know, knee-jerk, but I do think we have to put it on the table, and we've got to deal with it. We can't just ignore it. It's an issue.
Did we ask the actuaries to do a lower assumption last
time? He could come back.
We said lower it to 5 or some figure and then say what it was.
And we absolutely could bring that back at our next meeting in the January, February time frame if you want. We put that on there and I can have him do that. We'll pay a little bit of money to him to do some analysis and tell us what the contribution would be. Of course, if you don't make your performance year to year, the actuarial thing will also take that into consideration.
Sure.
It's assuming forward, here's what you're going to do.
Sure.
But you know, if you have a bad year, we're going to have to pay in more money next year as an example.
And
you've got to make a part of that.
We've got policymakers saying they're not moving rates for 2 years.
Right.
They've already said that.
Yeah.
So for us to sit here and say, oh, but we're going to make 7.5, we're not going to do it by investing $1 million in MLPs.
Hmm.
I mean, we'd have to take a huge risk and put $5 million, $6 or $10 million in there. And so let's manage it. Let's put it all on the table. And I think we have to look at lowering our assumptions for the benefit of our employees. Because if we keep going this route, then we're pushing a burden forward.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's good policy and I don't think it's a good practice. Our entity is, you know, we've got the capital, thankfully. And if we need to fund that capital, then I think we have to look at doing that. Or we've got to say, we've got to be more realistic with our assumption, lower to half or one or whatever it is, because for the people that are going to be retiring in the next 10 years, and if we don't make that return year after year after year, it's not equitable to this entity to pay them a 7.5% return. No offense, staff, but in all fairness, it didn't earn it. And now if we're going to fund it, then let's do it. I'm okay, but we've got to reconcile that. And I don't think anybody wants to. Nobody wants to do it because it's a big, big elephant in the room. And, you know, so I just want to bring it up. I'm going to keep bringing it up. It's responsible for us to put it on the table and deal with it. I don't know quite the answer. That's why I turned to you, John.
Well,
but
I think what we can do is we will bring, and it sounds like, I'll get with the actuaries and we'll bring forward some little pro formas actuarial stuff based on some different rates. We can see what the financial, the funding implications would be in future years, because that just becomes a budgetary thing.
Sure.
And of course, things like our water rates and things like that will take some impact. That'll be impacted by that. So we just have to decide what's the, but you're exactly right. If you don't think, I mean, it's just sort of kicking the can down if you don't think you're going to hit those targets.
And you know, as we sell water, like you say, you know, we're trying to keep that water rate as low as possible. But it would almost need to be a footnote to our financial statement otherwise. Hey, we've got this return, we've got this experience, we're doing it, here's what's going on, and at least have the information available so that we, because we can handle it. It's not like our company can't, I mean, our entity has the capital to do it if we have to do it.
Okay.
I know that wasn't an agenda item, but it's kind of like an ongoing agenda item.
I will have to say that a lot of funds have been adjusting downward. And it makes a lot of sense, because right now, and the way in which we are, especially with the low interest rate environment, attaining higher, longer term returns are going to be extraordinarily difficult unless you take on a lot more volatility. And
really don't want to do that.
It's a tough nut, but if you do lower the rate 0.5%, 0.75%, I don't know, whatever it happens to be that come up with, you are pre-funding some things. And if you do achieve that 7.5% or even 8% or 8.5% or whatever, then you'll be fully funded a lot sooner.
Be ahead of the curve.
You'd be ahead of the curve, yeah.
Okay. Anything else, Joe?
No, that's it. We'll bring it back next time.